We have just been talking, a few of us over there, about travel. I guess I don't know of really a better way of learning. Some of the things you learn are not what you intended to find out, or maybe even wanted to find out, but the process of being together over extended periods of time with people that you didn't expect to know prepares you, I think, for at least one definition of an educated person, and that is one for whom nothing human is strange. I think most of us are really afraid of strangers. And to be in a situation where you are taken care of by strangers gives you a world view, which I think is very useful. And it's a thing you can practice in a place like this. It's really one of the wonderful things about, you can be taken care of by strangers and can take care of strangers in return. And if you can't do that in a in a rather safe place like this, then maybe you're better off at home. But I think you can I think you can do it. At least I'm sure being taken care of by you, and I hope that's reciprocated. The reason for this last, and I travel continually. The reason for this particular trip that we want to talk about this evening was to make connections between certain Christian groups in the Soviet Union. These groups had made appeals to various church agencies, particularly Lutheran World Ministries in New York, to just simply come and be with us. That's all they wanted. Just come over and be with us. And of course, that's easier said than done. Who is to go? How are they to go and get permission to enter the Soviet Union? It takes a long time to arrange. And so from the time the invitations started until the time when we eventually were able to go was a period of 2 years. And it was kind of like a Macedonian call. Please come. Please just see if you can get over here. And they didn't know who they were writing to. Just, we know that you are Christian, we know that you are Lutheran, please come. And we had made application for visas, and they were in the Soviet embassy a year and a half. And we waited a year and a half for approval. Meanwhile, schedules of people change, and certain people can go and others can't. So it was very complicated. We got final permission to go the Tuesday before we left. And we left on Thursday. So we just didn't, you know, up until the very last minute, didn't even know. The final permission for our trip was made possible by the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, a man by the name of Piman, Archbishop Piman, in Moscow. You may have heard that there was a large an ecumenical gathering, people, religious leaders from all over the world in Moscow. There was a lot of press because Billy Graham went, and Billy Graham preached in a Baptist church and couldn't read a sign. I remember there was a big sign about the religious prisoners in the balcony, and Billy couldn't read the sign from the pulpit. And I'm assuming that as soon as he got home, he had his eyes checked because there's a big sign and the balcony was very close. We worshiped in that church ourselves. But of course, when you're in Russia, there are some things you don't want to read and some things you do. At any rate, that is the time, and it was Archbishop Pimon who called that conference together, that peace conference. It was Archbishop Pimon that presented the results of the peace conference to then Premier Brezhnev, and the day after he presented the results of that conference to the premier, he presented each of our group with copies of that conference. And the day after that, then he came to the United States to present the results of that conference to the General Assembly of the United Nations. His entry into the United States was very interesting because we forbade him to leave the island of Manhattan. I only say that as a way of saying that any difficulties we had moving around the Soviet Union were matched by difficulties that we presented to those people when they came over here. It would be interesting for you to have a list of all of the places in the United States that foreigners are forbidden to go to see. Would be very interesting. It's a very long list. Every slideshow should have an airplane shot and a sunset. I thought I'd get rid of that all in one slide, and then we can get down to business. But flying, We spent 3 days in New York being indoctrinated, I guess is the word. And I should say that all the time that we went through the indoctrination, we still hadn't got our visas yet. But we went to New York assuming that they would come, spent 3 days in New York getting background on Russia, on Russian theology, on Russian economics and the political system, on very basic Russian language, and we took choir lessons because our group of 15 went in as a choir. That was our cover. And anybody who had heard us would know immediately that it was just a cover. We weren't very good. But one of the requirements for the people who had to go was that they had to play a musical instrument, they had to be able to sing in a choir and sight read, and they also had to bring their instruments with them. So we went in with our instruments. I brought my consort of crumb horns. People brought clarinets and violins and trumpets. And then in New York, we purchased all kinds of things, like brand new guitars and keyboard instruments, you know, that you hang around your neck, these electronic kind of things. And we took all these new instruments in, and we lost them. We lost them in strategic places where Lutheran young people could find them. And the Lutheran young people over there left their old beat-up things in exchange. So we walked in with all these shiny new things, and we came out with all these beat-up old things, and the guards at the Moscow airport were very unhappy. After the 3 days of indoctrination in New York, our visas came through and we flew to Helsinki, and we had a week of indoctrination in Helsinki. Helsinki is the primary port of entry. It's the easiest port of entry into the Soviet Union, and Finland is 94% Lutheran. And so they were also our connection to the Lutheran communities in the Soviet Union. Just to give you an idea, and I may be awfully, in fact, I am awfully naive. After having traveled all over the world, I didn't know where Tallinn was, the capital city of Estonia. And so I just include this map. Finland is up at the very top, and you just take a four-hour boat ride down to Estonia. We went to Estonia, then Latvia, then Lithuania, and then flew over to Leningrad and then to Moscow. That's the Russian boat. And it's really... I can't describe the feeling of getting onto a Russian boat and knowing that you are setting sail from a rather friendly country like Finland, and then you wind up in the Soviet Union. You have all of these concepts and prejudices and images in your mind of what you're going to expect. And you have no reason for expecting anything at all except what you got out of Time magazine, and that's not too reliable. So we fantasized on the whole way over. And actually, then by the time we got there, we were a bundle of nerves, just totally suspicious of everybody. And I like to tell the story of the one fellow, the one young seminarian, who when he got to the hotel in Tallinn, came running out immediately, whispering. We were getting ready to go into our rooms, and he says, "I can't believe it's so obvious." And we said, "What's so obvious?" And he said, "The bugs." The bugs. The bugs are so obvious. And he motions with his finger. "Look at this. Look at this." And he takes us into his room and points up to the ceiling at the sprinkler system. You know, and I can't imagine why anybody would want to bug such a dummy. I can't imagine why they'd want to bug any of us. We really didn't know nothing. But on the water, and out in the middle of water, there's something about water that sort of whomps up your imagination. And we got very tight, our little cluster of 15 people. There were 13 or 12 seminarians from 12, I guess from only 10 Lutheran seminaries in the United States and Canada, along with Dr. Paul Wee, who is the Secretary General of Lutheran World Ministries, a member of his office staff, and myself. I went along as the artist, and nobody explained to me what that entailed, but I just took sketch pad and started sketching. This is Tallinn, the seaport capital city of Estonia, and it's a beautiful city. My first impression of the Soviet Union was really very favorable. It's kind of like Heidelberg, except it's on the sea instead of on a river. It's very German. Estonia, in fact, is quite German. It's the first Lutheran city in Lutheran country in history after Germany. And so there are statues of Martin Luther standing around in Tallinn, which really floored me. I was really surprised to see it. Beautiful and very clean. They spritzed it up because the Olympics prior to the last one, the one held in Moscow, all of the sailing events were held in Tallinn. Tallinn is a great center of sailing in Eastern Europe. The church on the far left is St. Olaf's, or St. Olaf Church. And very interesting. You are not allowed to have any religious meetings after 9 o'clock at night or before 7 o'clock in the morning. But we attended a wonderful Baptist hymn fest in St. Olaf's Church, and since the sun didn't go down until about 3 o'clock in the morning, we did most of our work illegally. I mean, it was sort of stupid going to bed at midnight and seeing the sun way up in the sky. You just couldn't do it. Besides our in-tourist agent, and all in-tourist agents are also KGB, she went to bed at 8 o'clock after writing her daily report, and so that's usually when we got to work, after she went to bed. When we arrived in the port of Tallinn, we were met by people with flowers, young people. And in fact, their coming to greet us was also illegal. The Archbishop of the Lutheran Church had refused to give them permission to come to visit us for some legitimate reasons. He was fearful. But they came anyway, and they brought flowers. One thing I discovered already at the dock was that flowers are the main way of communicating, if not in the Soviet Union, certainly in Estonia. If you like somebody a lot, they get a big bouquet. If you like the pastor's sermon, you get them a big bouquet. If at the end, you know, it's kind of nice. At the end, when you're walking out of church, and instead of saying, "Nice sermon, Pastor," you can tell him what you really think by just handing him a weed or something. But big bouquets mean, boy, you sure have made me very happy. And the flower vendors are all over the streets. So these people came with flowers, and we had a flower exchange and couldn't understand a word some of these people were saying, and we were immediately really captivated by them. Very, very wonderful people. And as I have said before, and I apologize for those of you that were in our last session and heard me say some of these things, and I don't like to repeat, but it's absolutely crucial to at least my sense of what transpired there. We got very close to these people very fast, and I don't know exactly why. Maybe it was because we knew we didn't have that much time together. Maybe it was because we were open to each other, and we came at their invitation, and they were so obviously glad to see us. But we got terribly close very quickly, and that makes you extremely vulnerable, so that the parting, the leave-taking, was not just difficult. It was literally a kind of death. It was the hardest thing I have ever had to do since burying my son, saying goodbye to these people. Isn't that a pretty town? this was taken around 2 a.m. You know, this is pretty far north, and so the sun stayed up a long time. But the houses are painted bright colors, and the doorways are cheerful, very clean. And I had absolutely no fear, nor did any of the women on the tour, of walking through the streets at 2 and 3 a.m. by yourself. No problem whatsoever.
Question. You guys go in English, there was the words the Sea of Peace. Do they speak some English there?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. And in fact, these young people spoke very good English. In the education system in Estonia, it's slightly different than it is in Russia. And I should point out that going to the Soviet Union is not the same as going to Russia. That may sound elementary to some of you, but most of us assume that whole thing is Russia, and it is not. One priest in Leningrad told me that we probably were unaware that Russia is the only country in the world surrounded by hostile communist nations. That's and the more we were there, the more that, you know, that we sensed that that was the truth. Estonia is an important Soviet link to the West. That's why they are going through an intensive Russification program in Estonia. When everybody wanted to find out how the Olympics were in Los Angeles, they all went to Tallinn and watched Finnish television. It's a very important link to the West, and that's why the English there. These students all learned English in school. Estonian is the language. They're trying to change that to Russian as the language of education, but it won't happen. Estonian is the language, and then the students have an alternative whether to take English or Russian as a second language. They invited us to their homes, and we were in their homes. We were very often in their homes all through the night and into the next day with no breaks. Well, with some breaks, but not for sleeping. There was just, it was like they had piled up their agendas for the entire time that they knew we were coming. What can we ask them? So as soon as we would sit down, all of a sudden the questions came pouring out. How do you do this? What do you think of this policy or that policy? What is the role of women in the church? All of those kinds of things. Very interesting. There is in Tallinn a Lutheran seminary with 40 students, 7 of whom are women. And we met with the seminary students as well. In the homes, with the food. Oy, the food. They just kept bringing out food all the time. Food and tea. Pastries. Estonian pastries. Oy. And it was just like we had known these people for a long time. And they were hurting. Tremendous struggle. The fellow in the back is an artist who is also a pastor. And he said, I would not mind showing you one of my sermons, but I think I would be ashamed to show you one of my paintings. And I asked why, and we got into a conversation, and finally he said, let me get one for you. And he went and got a painting to show me, and then I realized he shouldn't have been ashamed, he should have been afraid. His paintings were just so full of despair. I've never seen anything quite so helpless. And it's like there is such a sense of aloneness, cut off. It's like in your body, if your leg happens to be somewhere else, you know. I mean, I am convinced after our visit with these people that it might be possible for the body of Christ to commit suicide, which is a horrible thought. But anything that we are aiming over there in the way of weaponry, we are aiming at the body of Christ. It is over there. It is in there. There is no such thing as a godless nation. And I am convinced that as long as we believe that the source of evil resides in them alone and not also in us, that there's going to be war. And the same is true if they believe it. But for our president to say that they are the source of all evil in the world is not a thing for a confessing Christian to say, because it presumes he can say where God goes and where God doesn't go. And that's That's not only ridiculous, it's evil. We did not bring the gospel to the Soviet Union. It was there waiting for us. We thought that's what our job was, to sort of be missionaries. And it was very frustrating to try and find the words to confess your faith to them and then hear them say them first. I remember the question one of them asked, how can you be a Christian and a capitalist at the same time? Oh, now wait a minute. I had a question for you and I haven't, you know, I want to ask, how can you be a Christian and a communist at the same time? I wanted to ask it. And then they beat me with their question and I couldn't answer mine. So I didn't dare ask mine, you know. This is my flower lady. Every morning, once I got the hang of it, then this is where I got my flowers. And every morning I bought a big bunch of flowers, and after 7 days I had to say goodbye to her, and so I bought all of her flowers and then gave them back to her. And she knew then that I was leaving, and we gave each other a big hug, and we shed a few tears, and we said goodbye, and I never found out what her name was. An English-speaking group asked us to go out with them. Half of our group was suspicious that their motives were less than honorable. The other half didn't care, so we went. And we had a great day. They took us to a craft museum and showed us Estonian weaving and glassmaking and metalworking. Then they took us to lunch. And during lunch, this girl on the far right, whose name is Tina, she found out that I was an artist, and she was studying art at the local university, and she got so excited that she could talk with an artist. She jumped up from the table, this was on Sunday, ran to a bookstore which was closed, got the proprietor to open the store, bought a book on the architectural monuments of Tallinn, written in English, and brought it back to me and gave it to me for a present. Now, I don't know what my own personal sense of hospitality entails, or generosity either, for that matter, but it never went quite that far. Not quite that far. And it's the same way I felt in Uganda, where the people were so generous that you got embarrassed. And you had to ask yourself, how would we do it if they showed up at your house one day? How far would we go in order to give them a gift or to share an enthusiasm with them? Well, these people were constantly doing that. And these were total strangers. These were not part of a church operation at all. These were just ordinary citizens of the city. And they took us to lunch, and then afterwards we toured the city walls, and then, I mean, that evening we wound up in a disco. We're dancing all night and had a good time. The children are amazing. And when you are in the midst of the kind of tension that says everything within 6 minutes could disappear, then you look really hard at the children. And I don't know why we looked harder at the children over there than we do here, because everything could disappear from both countries in 6 minutes. Except that during the war, the Soviet Union, I mean the Second World War, lost 20 million people, men, women, and children, 20 million. 6,000 cities disappeared from the Soviet Union, never to be rebuilt. They have a sense of the horror of war that very few of us have. We visited a common grave outside of Leningrad. 450,000 people buried in one grave, 90% of them civilian. The folk festivals and dances and the celebrations of the Baltic countries is quite common and very elaborate. They maintain the folk traditions. One very pessimistic student said, they insist we remember the old ways, so we pay no attention to the way they are now. But I enjoyed it a lot. I just looked at this slide. They don't look happy, do they? That is one grumpy violin player, isn't it? In fact, I came to the conclusion that if they're smiling, they're Christian. Now, that's a generality. You know, you sure couldn't defend that on the basis of statistics. But every smiling person I met was a Christian. And this is Kaya, one of the students who had invited us to come. Kaya means echo. And she sort of was. Everything you said, she sort of said it again very softly. These people followed you everywhere you went. We wanted to take a break down on the seashore, and as we were walking through a little town on the south edge, the south border of Estonia, all of a sudden, six of these students were there. And as I remarked the other evening, they didn't come towards us or come up from behind us. They were just there. Like they came up through the sidewalk and just walked along with us. And it was very startling. I don't know how they got down there. They sure didn't go with us on the bus. I don't know how they knew we would even be on that particular street at that particular time. But it happened all week long that wherever we were, at least half of this group was there to ask more questions. They just wanted to know everything. We went to this little town in Estonia to visit a pastor who needed aspirin. That sounds funny. He had a medical condition and he needed aspirin and he couldn't get enough of them through the pharmacy. And so we each of us brought in 12 big bottles of aspirin for this pastor. So he had 12 times 15 bottles of aspirin. We dumped them all on his desk in the narthex and he was delighted. And then we sang for him. And he went over to the parsonage and got his wife and daughter and young son, and they sang for us. And we had our in the chancel of his church a little song fest. And we met this professor who had been imprisoned in Siberia in a labor camp for 14 years. And he had not one bitter bone in his body. He was full of such love and joy. It was a beautiful thing. This is Cindy Jurison on the left, who is a senior at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. This is the church where we had most of our meetings in Tallinn. I didn't get a good picture of the KGB agents outside looking through the windows, but they were there making notes. And we would sing for them, and then they would sing for us. It was interesting listening to Negro spirituals with an Estonian accent. And they loved to sing spirituals, and they did it very, very well. Beautiful, just beautiful people. Marta. And as I say, my job was to do pictures and give them away. And it came time to say goodbye and to do our hugs. And so the night before we were to leave at 10 o'clock in the evening, so we knew we couldn't assemble at the train station. It was after curfew hours. And so we said our goodbyes the night before and gave gifts and reminisced a little bit, and it was very tearful and sad. And then we went to the train station, put all of our luggage on our sleeper cars, and then we left and stood on the platform just to get some fresh air and discuss the events. And they came up through the platform. There they were. All of them, with Russian guards standing in front of each sleeper car, they showed up and we couldn't do anything but have a prayer circle. We sang a hymn, they sang a hymn, and then it was time. They gave us gifts, more flowers. They gave me a bottle of vodka. Why, I have no idea. But candy, books, record albums, and sent us back into the guards ushered us into the car. We put the windows down and waved, and they grabbed our hands, and immediately, it was very, very spooky, all started singing in unison. The Estonian students did, and they sang, "We are not afraid. We are not afraid." And the train started going, and they held onto our hands and ran down the platform. And it was awful. It was just awful how moving it was. And they really were not, they didn't say, "We shall overcome." They sang, "We are not afraid." And they were not. And it was their faith and their courage was just almost more than you could bear. Every one of those young people was interviewed the following day by the KGB for up to 15 hours. And we found that out because 5 weeks later we were walking down a side street of Leningrad and four of them came up through the sidewalk just to walk with us, ask us more questions. Incredible people. Such faith I've very, very seldom witnessed. Paul Wee and I devoured that bottle of vodka before we left the train station, I think. It really went in a hurry. And I don't drink. I don't drink at all. And boy, did I get sick. It was just absolutely disgusting. I was thoroughly ashamed of myself, but I thought, you know, as long as you're going to be miserable, let's really get miserable. And we cried all the way to Tallinn. We really did. I mean, from Tallinn to Riga, the capital of Latvia, we cried just about the entire way. I never saw such a motley group of people in my whole life. You'd get yourself together. You'd go out in the hall. Somebody down the hall would get themselves together. They'd come out of their room. You'd look at each other, and you'd start crying and go back into your room. It was really stupid. They were special kinds of tears, I have to tell you, knowing that your body has grown. That what you thought was your hunk of the body is now much larger. This is Riga, capital of Latvia, with the river flowing through it, and we were met at the train station by Archbishop Mačiulis, the Lutheran Archbishop of Latvia, who used to be a professional wrestler, and his favorite way of saying hello was to lift you over his head. We tried to teach him how to give the high five, you know, but he wasn't interested. He'd just pick you up and throw you around. We had two Latvian students with us, and this was the source of some tenderness, because the Latvians of the diaspora, those who left and came to Canada, the United States, and so forth, have very bitter feelings about the Latvian people who are left there, and particularly Lutheran versus Lutheran. And they feel that it's really not the Lutheran Church in Latvia, because how can you be a Lutheran and still, you know, be under that kind of regime? So these young Latvians were sons of people who had to leave Latvia, and they were almost disowned for having gone with us on this trip. And we met with the Latvian Lutherans, the churches of Riga. We worshiped with them. This is Old Gertrude's. What a great name for a church. Old Gertrude's. It's an old story. I don't know if I have time to tell you, but when the church was being built, it seemed at a certain point that everything that was done during the day was dismantled at night, and they couldn't do anything to prevent it. So Old Gertrude came to the building committee and said, "Bury me while I'm still alive in the walls of the church, and the devil wouldn't dare disturb the building program." Well, you know, building committees have enough trouble as it is without disposing of old ladies' bodies in the church walls. So they just let it go, but the problem got worse, and soon nobody showed up for work. Finally, she was on the verge of dying, and she came and she said, "Do it now, before I die." And so they had a doctor in Riga examine her and said, "Yes, sure enough, she has only maybe an hour to live." So they wrapped her up and buried her in the walls of Old Gertrude's, and the building program proceeded on schedule. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. Don't come to me tomorrow morning and ask for verification, for heaven's sake. I'm just repeating what I was told. Machulis asked us to sing 6 songs. We said, "Can we use a guitar?" He checked it out with the church council and then came back and said, "Sure, but very quietly." And our Latvian students joined in the celebration. And we sang 6 songs with a very quiet guitar, and one of the Latvian students preached the evening sermon. And afterwards, it was wonderful. What a celebration we had. And when we went to other churches, it was almost like from that point on, from the evening service at Old Gertrude's in Riga, churches all throughout Latvia said, "Please come and visit us. Please come." This is one of the churches that we visited in a small village. That's the pastor. Oh, is she beautiful? The service lasted for 3 hours. When anything lasts for 3 hours and I don't understand the language, I get out my sketch pad. So I started drawing her, and after church, her interpreter came over to me and said, "The pastor would like to know what you were doing during church." I hadn't felt like that since I was about 10 years old and my father was the pastor. But I said, I was drawing a picture of her. And he said, "The pastor would like to see the picture you were drawing." So I quick signed it, and he took it over to her, and he came back and said, "The pastor would like the picture you drew, would like to keep it." And I said, "Yes, in exchange for her flowers." So I gave her my drawing. This is a picture of her with my drawing under her arm. She hasn't coughed up her flowers yet, though. I assume my drawing has lasted longer than her flowers. But boy, did our women have lots of questions to ask her. And she was very, very forthright. Gave us lots of information about the role of women in the ministry in the Soviet Union. And it's really quite prominent, very active. Doesn't look like a picture from the Soviet Union. We were having a good time. The man in the middle is the unofficial bishop of the Lutheran Church in Siberia. There are over 1 million Lutherans in Siberia, in about 200 congregations, and each of those congregations has built a building within the last 5 years for worship. And already every building is too small to house the congregation. This man at this meeting asked if I would go to Siberia and help these people decorate their churches with their folk art. And so I am now in process of arranging with the Soviet to go to Siberia for 6 months and work with the Lutherans in Siberia. I drew him. He's a saint. Beautiful man. And we worshiped in many different contexts. And the churches were all filled to overflowing. Eat. After every church service, you got flowers and food. And one of the interesting comestibles we had was that little black stuff you can see with the white dollop of sour cream on the top. See it at the bottom of the slide? That was a very interesting thing. Our group polished off about 5 platters. I mean, big platters. We didn't like the stuff, but we kept sending back for more and couldn't figure out what it was. And one of the Latvian students at the end of the meal asked a little lady what that was. We couldn't figure it out. And she gave him some description, and he didn't understand it. So he went to another lady with the description, and she told us what it was. Marijuana. Marijuana. It's a delicacy in Latvia. Everybody's got a little patch of it in the backyard. But they don't smoke it. They make brownies out of it. And we just scarfed them like nobody's business. And then we got on the bus and flew back to Riga. That's how you look. That's how your group looks after 5 platters of marijuana cookies. I wish I had the other picture. The picture right after this shows Cindy arguing with the Archbishop about whether she can carry his crozier or not. They got into a big tussle right there, and I thought sure he was going to pick her up and put her over his head. But all those funny smiles, I can't believe it. Craft celebrations all over, and I fell in love. I fell in love in Latvia with this lady in the middle. I mean, it was, you know, love from afar, but oh my gosh, she looked like something out of a Botticelli painting. I couldn't believe how gorgeous she was, and I wish she would have just sat still until I could get all my art supplies together and do a painting of her. She played this complicated musical instrument. She was the leader of the group. And after every song, everybody went huzzah and hooray, and she stood up to acknowledge and never once cracked a smile. Not once! And it was so disappointing. My idea about smiling Christians was emphasized. Oh boy, was she beautiful. But there's an even prettier one, I think. Look at Oma. You know the apple dolls? Didn't she look like an apple doll? Or like they make out of old stockings? Huh? Do they make Cabbage Patch old people? Listen, look at her. Oh my gosh, I just want to go up and grab her, you know, like that, and then take her home. And she talked a blue streak. You couldn't understand a word she said, but every time you asked a question, she didn't understand, but she answered. And oh my gosh, was she excited. And the children, drawing the children all the time. And I found a sure enough way of making friends is get out the sketchbook. Pretty soon the children come, then their parents come, and everybody wants a picture. And the young people invited us over to talk, and we would talk with them all day long. And then we flew to Lithuania, to Vilnius, where we were met by another great saint of the Lutheran Church. I apologize for all of this being so Lutheran to those of you who could care less about the Lutheranness of this, but this is one great Lutheran man. This is Jonas Kalvinas, the Archbishop of Lithuania. And his church was on the Polish border, his town and his church. And so we couldn't go because of the skirmishes. We couldn't go to his town. So he brought the town to Vilnius. I mean, by train, bus, car, everybody in the town came to meet the 15 of us. And we worshiped. Oy, did we worship. We worshiped co-jointly with the Lutheran Archbishop Kalvinas and the Russian Orthodox Archbishop Viktorin of Lithuania. We worshiped in this Russian Orthodox Cathedral. Now, I don't know how much you know about Russian Orthodoxy, but they don't worship with nobody. That's why we call it Orthodox. But we had a joint service, And the Orthodox services are very long. And you add a Lutheran service to it, and it gets even longer. So I got out my sketchbook, started drawing. We visited their shrines, had our pictures taken. And then Archbishop Victorin asked me, "What were you doing during the church service?" So I had to show him his picture. And he wanted it. And he didn't get any flowers, so I didn't get any flowers in exchange. I got totally ripped off by the Russian Archbishop. And we visited this church, which was a beautiful old church that they were remodeling to become a university building. And when we were there, I saw that they were painting over the 14th century frescoes. And it made me so angry because one of the workers was sleeping while the other one was taking a roller. And I just lost it. I totally lost my cool and started kicking on the door and banging it with my fists and woke the guy up, and he came over to the door and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "As long as you're going to do it, be awake and look at it, what you're doing." And Jonas Calvinus said, "Richard, this has not been a church for a long time. Everyone has left." And then he started to cry. He said, "This is the church where I preached my first sermon." So I painted him a fresco. And I did him I also painted him an icon with a Luther seal in it, which is very unorthodox. But it was because he was responsible for bringing us together in that joint service. And I painted a picture of one of the girls of his congregation and asked Jonas Calvinus how you say pretty girl. And he told me, and I wrote it on the bottom of the picture and gave it to her, and she scratched it out. She scratched out pretty girl and wrote ugly underneath it. And I asked Jonas about this, and he told me what it was. So I scratched out ugly, and I wrote beautiful. And she took it and cried and hugged it to her breast as though somehow she had gotten some affirmation of who she was. And we preached in Baptist churches in Lithuania, and we worshiped together at the foot of the walls of Trakai Castle on an island in Lithuania, celebrated the Eucharist as a group together in preparation for going to Russia. And we relived all of the moments that were somehow terrifying and delightful. And we remembered the children. They're like any children, except they're perfect. That really made me nervous. I didn't see anybody in the whole, any child in the whole Soviet Union. I didn't see any little guy kick his sister. I thought, what is going on here? You know, I expected when they turned around to see little wind-up keys sticking out of the backs. They were just so beautiful. And when I got home and hit the Kennedy Airport and saw two little kids as soon as I got off the airport scrapping on the airport floor, I thought, oh boy, is it good to be home. Oh, the children. So that when you go to the Soviet Union once again and recall that all of this is happening and that things like this in Leningrad could be just totally destroyed, art of centuries and the families and the heroes and the saints, all of that just totally destroyed, it just makes you wonder whether or not we're being responsible enough, not only to the past but to the future, particularly to the children. So the castles of Leningrad and St. Basil's Church in Moscow. That's a little scary place. That's our hotel in Leningrad. I thought I'd get in there and never get out. It's It's amazing what they provide for the tourists, the most incredible, deluxe, plush, capitalist accommodations you can imagine. I apologize for the personal reference, but we went berserk in the Hermitage. I don't know if you're familiar. One of the great museums in the world is in Leningrad, and it is full of Van Goghs and Rembrandts, and I just sort of went aesthetically berserk. We were given 45 minutes to see the Hermitage, which is like, you know, doing the Louvre in half an hour. And so we just kicked off our in-tourist guide and said, we're going to do this and we'll see you tonight, a whole day. And it was like gorging yourself on warm lemon meringue pie, all that beautiful stuff. And I started giving a tour of the Hermitage to our 15, gave them a whole history of modern art, because they had it all right there. It was beautifully laid out. And by the time I was done, at the end of the day, we had about 300 people all listening to the history of modern art, including a choir from Sweden, and, you know, it was really something. It was a good day. Once again, the reminders of the death and destruction of this country that these people have suffered, at least as some kind of explanation of their paranoia. You have to understand that there are reasons why they have surrounded themselves with countries like Poland and Hungary and Czechoslovakia. They don't understand those invasions in our terms as offensive, strictly defensive. Where did all of the wars originate that wiped out their people? One decade after another, three times during the Second World War, invaded from always the same direction. Germany. Germany. Germany kept coming at them and wiping out their people and their cities. And then we wonder why they're paranoid about their paranoia when we start putting missiles in Germany. So we sang songs like, where have all the flowers gone? and old songs like that, which helped us understand why there weren't any men, older men. We attended Bach concerts and the ballet in the Kremlin. Wonderful ballet. Bolshoi Ballet, and before the ballet, everybody goes to the top floor of the ballet opera house, and they partake of some of the most delicious food at some of the most ridiculously cheap prices, and all kinds of people, not rich people, not just poor people, but people in bib overalls and Sunday suits and a whole wide mix, families and people on dates and all kinds of folks. And they're all having good food and wonderful entertainment. I sound like a propagandist. I have to tell you, while I'm saying all of this, that I was never so glad to be back from any place that I had ever visited. See? Good food. Whoa, look at all that stuff. You know, you talk about the lines. Whenever we were preparing to go to Russia, everybody was saying, oh man, you're going to have to stand in line for a loaf of bread, stand in line for a ham sandwich, stand in all these long lines. If you can get any meat, you know, you're going to have to wait for a mile. Well, there it is. It's all laid out for you. The reason that you stand in line a lot is because they don't have many cash registers and they have a very silly system of selling. If you walk into a store and you want something, the sales clerk will take it from you and give you a little slip of paper. Well, you've stood in line once now to get to the sales clerk. Now you go to the cash register with your little slip of paper. There's another line. And then you pay your bill. Then you have your little slip of paper stamped. You go back to the original clerk. That's a third line. And she wraps your thing for you and you leave. There's three lines to get a hanky. That's what the lines are about, not that there's not enough stuff around. It's just a silly system of selling. A wedding in the Baptist church in Moscow, where we sang. And a Lutheran church outside of Leningrad, which we attended, and the organist was sick. And so one of our members of our party, Truls Persson, plays a good organ, and so he volunteered to fill in. And it was really interesting because he couldn't figure anything out, and he got directions in about 8 different languages. And it was frustrating, and it was not only frustrating, but at the same time a kind of microcosm of the whole world. I sort of sense that war, if it happens, will happen between people who desperately want peace, who want harmony, and can't explain how badly they need it and what lengths they are willing to go to get it. Everybody's struggling for harmony, but it was chaos. And finally he got it to working, and we sang. Look at the jam churches. Look at them babushkas. But all ages. We visited theological students at the Orthodox Seminary in Moscow and really stuck tough questions to them and had wonderful debates, really heavy times, serious stuff. And they shared very openly some of their concerns. It was what I call a 180-degree experience. Whatever it was up to this time I thought my art could be used for, I decided that there are other ways in which it can be used, that it can be put into the service of peacemaking, bridge building, of taking care of poor and hungry of all kinds, including poor in spirit, but never again, because of the experience of travel, will I be the same. And that's good, and that's why I'm going again. God bless.